You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you up to date on all of the news that made headlines this week around our area. Our panel today, Scott McIntosh with Idaho Statesman, Margaret Carmel with the Idaho Press, and Mike Sharp with KIVI 6 on your side. Happy Friday.
Yay.
Well, guess what we're going to start with today?
The Boise mayor's race.
How did you know?
I guess.
I know, right? All right. So the gloves are seem to be kind of coming off. Margaret, you covered the most, well, I don't know if it's the most recent forum because I cannot remember how many there have been because there have been so many. But this happened earlier this week at Boise State University. Take us back to really the end of the forum, right?
So up until the closing minutes of the forum, this was a very innocuous discussion, just kind of a snoozer of a debate. A lot of the conversation just centered around how could city politics help students, you know, with food security concerns and the diversity question. It was very focused on students, which I think was very helpful for the students in the room, but it was a very, you know, kind of lower key forum than a lot of people had been seeing. And then in the last, at the very end, Mayor Beter got up for his closing statements, and he just really attacked ACHD Commissioner Rebecca Arnold, City Council President Laura McLean, and former Mayor Brent Coles. You know, went down the line. He said that McLean had nothing to show for her nearly a decade on City Council. Brent Coles, he referenced that scandal that had him leave office right before Mayor Beter took office. And then he called Rebecca Arnold the most contentious public servant he's been around. And I think Mayor Beter probably expected the moderators to just close it out. And Brent Coles actually took the lead, and he jumped up and said, excuse me, I want to respond to that. And then it set off this chain where down the line, all of the candidates, you know, kind of fought back, and Coles, you know, ran over on his time, but he basically said, hey, I'm sorry for that financial scandal where I misused public funds. I'm sorry about that.
And I went to jail.
I don't think he mentioned that, but he did apologize.
I mean, he went to jail.
And then he went through and said, hey, but here's all the other things that I did while I was mayor. And then Rebecca Arnold got up, and, you know, she wasn't even looking at the audience for most of her remarks. She was staring down Mayor Beter from the other end of the podium, the stage. And she just said, you know, I think her quote was, what some people call contentious, other people call courageous. And I'm the only one that's willing to stand up to you in town. And because Mayor Beter really has a lot of allies in almost every single agency, government agency here in the city. But ACHD really is a stronghold of folks who oppose Mayor Beter. And so she referenced that. And then Lauren McLean kind of had the most diplomatic response, or not even diplomatic, but least abrasive response. She just said, you know, I'm here to rise above old grudges, and, you know, these kinds of fights are not what I want to be taking part in if I'm elected. You know, so it was just this, like, you know, everyone in the audience was, you know, especially reporters who, like me, are kind of tired by the end of this this
perked you up, didn't it?
This tough election season. I think everyone in the audience went, whoa, got to pay attention. And really, it's kind of, to me, was the ending point of Mayor Beter building to being more aggressive, because in every forum I've seen him get increasingly aggressive. In the early forums, he didn't say anything bad about anybody. He stuck to his lane, his record, and just said, you know, and even in the first debate that you moderated at the Conservation Partners for Idaho, he was very much, I'm going to talk about me and my accomplishments. But then every forum, I've seen him inch a little closer and start taking swipes at McLean and Coles and Arnold. And it just kind of, like, it's like him ramping that up, and then it just exploded.
I think you read it right. Sorry to step on you, Scott, but it did read to me like a miscalculation as well, that he kind of thought this was the last person to speak and he was going to get these jabs in and nobody else was going to say a word. And it turned out to kind of blow up in his face. And I think we've seen a couple of those miscalculations. And I've been trying to figure out, and I have yet to find anybody on the record to tell me whether or not these miscalculations are part of a larger plan. Because, I mean, in his initial press release about Brent Coles, he referred to him is Brett. He's continued to make this mistake with Lauren's experience, saying that she's been on the city council for 10 years when he knows that she's been on the city council for eight years.
He appointed her.
Right, right. So it's these small things that show a little bit of a disregard for the opponents, and that seems to be ramping up. I find it interesting. I don't know if it's something that just comes with being an incumbent, being challenged by people you still hold respect for.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people need to keep in mind that, you know, Dave Beter is the incumbent mayor, and through this whole campaign, he's been attacked. I mean, people kind of forget that, that, you know, every forum, you know, Brent Coles in one way or another is attacking Mayor Beter's record, and Rebecca Arnold is certainly attacking Mayor Beter's record, and to some extent, Lauren McClain, though more diplomatically, has been challenging some of the decisions and some of the things that Mayor Beter has done. So, you know, to some extent, I feel like, you know, he was coming out because he has been attacked, and he was saying, all right, well, I'm done with that, so now I'm going to go on the attack.
Well, and I believe in an interview that he had with our George Prentice, or I want to say maybe a week ago, he made mention that he said, well, everyone seems to be focused on me and attacking me, yet at the same time, one can argue, well, you are the incumbent, so the people who run are not necessarily running because they agree with everything you've done.
Right. Well, and two, it's important to step back. I think a lot of times we cover elections as if they're in a bubble. This is coming on the heels of years where there hasn't really been a move Boise's made that hasn't come with some sort of criticism or blow up, just continually over and over and over again. The stadium and the library are just the most recent examples. So I imagine there is some pent up frustration. I mean, that's the reason Dave was involved, or Mayor Beter was involved, in pushing candidates to run for ACHD's commission, because he felt like the ACHD commission was reluctant to agree with the concepts that he thought were valuable for the city. And of course, that's going to create a negative relationship with Rebecca Arnold, which feeds into her then running for mayor and making this race what it is.
A remarkable moment on Wednesday at the forum hosted by the Idaho Statesman was one of the final questions was, what would you do in Boise if you were king or queen for a day? And Mayor Beter said, I would get rid of ACHD. You know,
that's right.
And I remember Rebecca Arnold kind of threw up her hands and she said, disrespect to the voters. Mm-hmm. And in response to that. And so that friction of Mayor Beter wanting to, like, really openly opposing ACHD, its very existence, as well as how they set their priorities, mm-hmm. it's really set the tone for this race with Arnold challenging him.
I think what's fascinating, too, is, frankly, how much we are talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in the media. I seem to not be able to go anywhere without people asking me about this race in particular, and that is even outside of Boise.
Yeah.
Well, think of it this way. I mean, just from a television perspective, television stations gain a lot of money in political advertising. It's something that everybody circles on the budget. 2018 wasn't a strong election year. Those were statewide races, and we didn't have gubernatorial candidates buying ads at the rate that we currently have city council or city hall candidates buying ads. That's a pretty tremendous difference that they're willing to spend this money, and there's a lot of money being pumped in right now.
And, you know, as a purist, I love elections because I think it's great that it brings out these issues. So, you know, a mayoral term is 4 years. So for 4 years, you know, you may have some discussions about this issue or that issue as it comes up. But the election is a time to bring all these issues to the forefront. And I really do think whoever wins this race, I think the discussion and debate about the issues and the differing viewpoints and perspectives has been really beneficial to the running of city government.
Well, and how lucky are we that this happened in an off year, right? That the way the state code lays out municipal elections enables us to really focus on the municipal elections when they come up, and they don't just get blown over because a presidential race might be going on or because of statewide races. It's really a great opportunity.
Because frankly, they make a bigger difference in someone's daily mm-hmm. life than other, like, state elections and things like that. Right. So, quick question before we move on from each of you. Think there's going to be a runoff?
Yes.
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 Okay, then.
What do you think, Gemma?
I'm not going to give my opinion on that one. I'm just moderating this. So there's actually other news going on. So before we go into break, Scott, I want to talk about the city of Meridian voting to ban cell phones. It's while driving. correct, but there's some nuances to this.
Yeah, it's cell phone use, handheld cell phone devices or mobile devices while driving. So this is a step beyond texting and driving. The state has a texting and driving ban, but you know, somebody could be having a cell phone in their hand and be talking, and you know, a police officer might see that, and it's not clear whether the person is texting or talking or whatever. So Meridian has gone ahead and voted to ban it altogether. You can't have a cell phone in your hand. Now, you can still talk hands-free, you know, communication by voice and sending text or whatever, but you just can't have it holding it in your hand.
So my question on that, if I read this properly, if the car is running and you're in the driver's seat. So let's say you're at a red light, because I am very guilty of this. If I am waiting at a red light, I will pick up my cell phone and look at something. My understanding is you cannot do that either.
Right. You're still driving. Even though you're sitting at a red light, you're still driving. You're still in control of a vehicle.
Right. And that's probably the most likely opportunity for a pedestrian to be in front of you as well. You put down the phone, you see the green light, and you go. You're probably actually less prepared to see what's around you during that time than when you're driving.
And we've had other municipalities already do this, correct?
Right. Idaho Falls, and I think Pocatello was the other.
Nobody here. Nobody in the Treasure Valley.
This is the first in the Treasure Valley. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see then if other cities come on board with something like this.
Right. And again, this is kind of, you know, the legislature tried to tackle this last year, a couple of years ago. Senator Jim Rice from Caldwell tried to introduce a statewide ban similar to this. Because, you know, if you're driving through Meridian and then all of a sudden you cross over into the city of Boise, now all of a sudden it's okay. Or vice versa, you're talking on your phone in Boise and you cross over into Meridian, now all of a sudden it's illegal. So it would be nice to have kind of a uniform.
Well, and that's a good point, Scott, because I have to say, like, when I'm on Eagle Road, I don't know when Eagle Road becomes Meridian. I mean, I realize when I'm at the Villages at Meridian, I'm now in Meridian, but St. Luke's is, I believe, still in the Boise city limits. I don't know. I know we're all nodding or shaking. Yeah. We don't know.
No, it's a great question.
That's a really good question.
Well, and this vote too, I mean, it was 3-3 and Mayor Tammy DeVere ended up having to vote that tie-breaking vote. So it wasn't like it was an easy thing. In fact, the meeting before when they tried to pass it, one of the city council members walked out to avoid having a quorum. So they couldn't vote on it until more of the city council members were there. So this was a fairly contentious vote in the first place. But I think part of what made it palatable and what gave it the ability to pass in Meridian was the fact that the bill itself, or at least the idea of it, seemed to be coming from the police chief. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that's where the reluctance for these type of ordinances come from, because it's kind of a hard task for police to figure out exactly, right? Like, if you're Idaho State Police and you have a city code or a state code change, you know, being able to know where those boundaries are and use that as the offense to pull somebody over is a lot more difficult for them to make that calculation. So knowing that the police chief was making this case for this ordinance made it a whole lot easier to pass.
And we'll actually have city council member Joe Borton on the program on Tuesday to talk more in depth, because he voted in favor of this ordinance. It goes into effect in January?
January 2020.
I want to talk about the recent forum that was put together by students at Boise State University. This is regarding diversity, and it goes all the way back, if we can remember back before election season, to the summer when 28 Republican legislators sent a letter to then brand new President Dr. Trump at BSU about this issue of diversity. So, Scott, get us kind of updated as to what happened with this forum.
Yeah, so this forum was really great. It was hosted by the Young Democrats of Boise State University and the College Republicans at Boise State University, and they invited State Senator Sheree Buckner Webb and Representative Matt Erpelding, Democrats of Boise, and Barbara Ehart and Brian Zollinger, Republican state legislators, to come and have a kind of a moderated debate forum about diversity and inclusionary programs in higher education, but specifically at Boise State. And I think maybe the biggest takeaway that a lot of people focused on was the whether legislators in this coming legislative session would try to defund Boise State University, which is, you know, kind of a far-fetched thing, which most even Republican legislators admit. But there are some legislators, Tammy Nichols of Caldwell or of Middleton has said that she wants to defund Boise State because of diversity and inclusionary programs. And both Ehart and Zollinger said at the forum that they know of no effort and there's no idea that they would try to defund Boise State University. Now, Brian Zollinger did say that there would be no effort to defund Boise State in total. So I suspect that there might still be some sort of movement afoot at the session to try to strike out those line items. And he referenced 20 positions that are diversity liaisons and $1 million of funding positions that go toward diversity and inclusionary programs. So I suspect we will see probably something in the session that tries to target that money. Now, whether they can do that or not, I don't know.
Right, right. So one of the things that I've seen in the messaging around this, initially there seemed to be some coalescence around the point of defunding the university itself. But since then, I've seen them kind of back off, and they say, I've yet to see anybody suggest that. What they seem to be doing is doing the research to see where the funds are coming from to pay for those positions you mentioned, to pay for some of these programs, and consider if there are state funds going to these programs, that's what they would try to defund and force, you know, more fundraising and things like that, because they believe state funds should go to programs that are less what they believe is excluding other students.
One thing that the Idaho Press's Betsy Russell reported on whenever this was going on is that a lot of the funding for some of the specific programs over at Boise State that they objected to the most, like a special graduation for Black students and other programs, were funded from private corporations donating things. That kind of that line between what is paying for these programs is it's not all public taxpayer money. There is private fundraising that's coming in. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see where the legislators draw that line, and if they choose to say, okay, well, the money funding these programs we really object to, we can't, you know, it's we're not funding it, so we can't cut it, so let's try to cut some, you know, some staff that we disagree with or some other things. I think there's going to be a conversation of how far do we go with cutting those programs? How far are they going to take that? And I saw some posts from Chad Christensen, another Republican legislator that was pretty on board with that defunding idea with Tammy, along with Tammy Nichols.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of legislators, I want to talk about how they're trying to tackle property tax issues. Because, Scott, I mean, this is also a big narrative in the Boise mayoral candidates with this race, but we have to look at it at a statewide level as well.
Right. And so the state legislator put together this working group of legislators, and they met for the first time on Monday. And really, it was a day-long session, and it was they invited a lot of tax experts from the State Tax Commission and Idaho Association of Cities and Idaho Association of Counties to get an overview of how property taxes work. And, you know, I think for me, the bottom line is that it's really, really complicated. It might be, you know, more acute in the city of Boise because we have such quickly rising property values, which does contribute to rising property taxes. And also the city of Boise, I took a look at some of the property tax levy rates. In the city of Boise, if you live in Boise, the city makes up 43% of your tax bill, whereas in the city of Meridian, it makes up only 30% of your tax bill. So there, it varies from city to city how much you're contributing to the city. But you're not just talking about this city. You're talking about school districts and mosquito abatement districts and cemetery districts and library districts. And the legislators on this working group were given that big picture look at where we're at as a state. And Kathleen Ireland from the State Tax Commission, you know, she said that we rank pretty low in terms of property tax burden. Now, about 42nd in the nation. So I think the problem is that Idaho's property taxes have been so low historically that if you go from $2,000 a year in property taxes to $4,000 or $5,000 a year, it seems like a really big deal. But in other states in the country, $4,000 or $5,000 of property taxes is not a big deal. It's not a lot, you know. So compared nationally, what the legislators were told is we're really not that bad. But we are definitely rising quickly, particularly in the Treasure Valley.
Mike, I want to talk a little bit about some news that you have a reporter on right now, researching and delving into the issue with Medicaid waivers, but in particular, how this could potentially be affecting family planning.
Right. So, I mean, they've had a multiple waivers that have popped up.
Right.
And this one would make it so that those who are on Medicaid, in order to access family planning services, they would have to see their primary care physician first. Creating kind of that first stop for them. So they wouldn't be able to go directly to a gynecologist. They would have to go see their primary care physician first, and they would have to receive a note, right? So they could then go on to this other doctor, which has raised alarms. You know, Ilana Rubel has been very vocal against this measure. And kind of pushing back against it. She does not want to see any hurdles added for people who are trying to access this care, especially when you're talking about somebody trying to access contraception, which would then, you know, alleviate a lot of future probably, you know, medical concerns as well as other concerns that come with having children, right? Mm-hmm. So if somebody's trying to access those that kind of care, why would you add this? Whereas we also, you know, obviously have on the record the people who are for it. And their arguments are, you know, they would like to see people who are reaching out and getting this care to have kind of a central point, somebody who is doing the full body care, who can then kind of oversee how they're getting the rest of their body cared for as well, to make sure that they are actually seeing a general practitioner and things like that. Now, there's debate about whether or not, I mean, obviously the Planned Parenthood has some concerns that this is directly aimed at abortion providers and trying to keep people from getting access to lawful abortions. However, I don't think that anybody's given up on that point. What we did some research. We found that of the comments that have been put in for this waiver, I believe there were 390 total, and 383 were against the waiver. 7 were for it. So it seems like when it comes to what the public is asking for, they're not in favor of this, but it's moving forward.
Well, and my question is, with like having to go to a general practitioner and then a gynecologist, is it specifically in this waiver, Mike, did you find if you are trying to access contraception, or is it like a well woman visit when you go and get your annual exam? Do you have to go to your?
I believe it's if you want to see your OBGYN, you are going to need to go to your general practitioner first.
See, that is just a fascinating little hurdle in there, because being a woman who sees their gynecologist mm-hmm. once a year, it's just one more step that I'm wondering if women would then not get that care. And there is so much more that goes into a gynecological visit that has absolutely nothing to do with contraception.
Right. No, 100%. I mean, I think that's 100% of the argument against the waiver. That's why so many people have stepped forward against it, is adding that hurdle. There are people who will not go through that extra step, that sometimes getting them to go to the family care or the family services doctor is as difficult as getting them to go to any doctor, right? So adding that hurdle, they may be concerned about perceptions. They may be concerned about funding, even though they are on Medicaid. There's still some concerns that they have to deal with there. I don't think that's a crazy concern to think that maybe people would be reluctant to have to go through this program.
Margaret, we've got about 2 minutes left, and I want to quickly get to this story that you recently did regarding an urban renewal official being invited to speak.
Yeah, so in January of this year, I found an email that said that a Capital City Development Corporation urban renewal official was invited to go meet with Boise City officials and developer Tommy Alquist to talk about the Tank Farm project and developing a district in the area of the that big industrial petroleum tank farm along Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the statute is pretty clear that people should not be discussing urban renewal projects until city council votes and decides that that urban renewal can actually happen in that area. And that meeting happened 5 months before that district was actually voted and approved by city council. And I thought that was very interesting. I talked to officials, and everybody pretty much denied it, that any conversation happened. I think city spokesman Mike Journey's words to me were, that email is wrong. So it was very interesting. And this district has been so controversial because it's urban renewal, but in a neighborhood where people live. And people are very afraid of gentrification and getting priced out. So the project, I wrote the story because, you know, the project in developing that tank farm has really kind of drawn some worry and some ire from people who live on that Central Bench area.
I want to thank all of you for coming in today and talking. One of my favorite segments of the entire week is our roundtable. And we will probably continue to talk about the elections until, well, even after the election, we're going to be talking about the election. Let's just be honest about that, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Our guest today, Mike Sharp with KIVI 6 on your side, Margaret Carmel with the Idaho Press, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman. Up next, if you're kind of tired of that traditional and tame Halloween haunted house, we have found the perfect spot for you. I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters.